Andy, my dude, have you heard of the magical website builder known as Squarespace?
Ugh, not another Squarespace ad. I feel like every podcast is sponsored by them.
Hey, don't knock it until you try it. Yes, okay, it is overhyped. But actually, it lives up to the hype. Squarespace is like a website fairy godmother. With a click of a button, your site transforms into a beautiful masterpiece.
A website fairy godmother? That sounds interesting. What makes it so magical?
Well, for starters, those slick templates make anyone look like a professional web designer. Pick one, customize the colors and fonts to match your brand, and voila. Plus, the drag-and-drop fluid engine is so easy, your grandma could build a site on Squarespace.
Well, she did knit me a lovely scarf last Christmas. Maybe website design is next.
Exactly. And when you're ready to sell your Nana's handmade scarves online, Squarespace has built-in e-commerce. Add a store with one click, get flexible payment options, then watch those sales roll in. And when she wants to teach others her steezy scarf skills, Squarespace's new courses feature is just the ticket. Nana can set up her curriculum and enrollments and payments in a snap and become the next e-knitting influencer.
Ugh, wow, you really sold me with the grandma angle. Sign me up for that free trial.
Just go to thenextreel.com/Squarespace and transform your site into a beautiful Squarespace masterpiece.
Well, thanks, Pete. Even though it's overhyped, Squarespace actually sounds perfect for Nana's site's needs. Appreciate the warning on the ads, though. I'll brace myself next time I listen to a podcast.
Anytime. Let me know if you need any help getting that site up and running. Andy, can you believe we've almost hit 700 episodes of The Next Reel?
I know, it's crazy. And with all the other episodes in our family of podcasts, we are well over 1,200 episodes of movie conversation. It's really pretty amazing that we've gotten to have these in-depth movie chats every week for over a decade now.
And we couldn't have done it without our loyal community of film fans. Their support over the years has meant so much.
For sure. That reminds me, we should give the merch store a shout out. Buying shirts from thenextreel.com/merch is a great way listeners can continue to support the show. Plus, they get to sport our great designs.
Absolutely. I think sometimes folks forget we have a variety of shirts, mugs, phone cases, and more available. In fact, a great place to start is with a shirt sporting the Next Reel's logo.
We also have that classic Fast Times Spicoli Surf School tee, or the weirdly popular Rusty's European Tour shirt.
The one from National Lampoon's European Vacation. Why is that so popular?
Search me, but we have sold a ridiculous number of those. I guess there are a lot of Rusty's taking trips to Europe?
We're always adding new designs based on movies we've covered, like our brand new design for A Streetcar Named Desire, featuring a streetcar named Desire. So if you want to rep your love of TNR and films, head to thenextreel.com/merch.
Every purchase helps us continue to have these weekly in-depth conversations. So visit thenextreel.com/merch today.
And as always, thanks for listening and being a part of the Next Reel community. We've got lots more great movie chats coming your way.
It's showtime, folks. Enjoy the show.
Oh, say can you see? It's Saturday matinee, everybody. And on this very day in 1931, the Star-Spangled Banner becomes the first official and still current U.S. national anthem. And I am here, Pete Wright, recording with my Star-Spangled besties, Rob Kubasko and Kyle Olson. Hello, gentlemen.
And there's been no controversy about that decision ever since.
Nope, never since. But let me tell you, when you're looking at on this day for today in history, the rest is a dumpster fire. This was not a good day for historical things.
Well, because you missed the biggest and most important event that happened on this very day 2 years ago was when Rob and I first joined the Next Reel family. Our first episode of Marvel Movie Minute Hulk dropped 2 years ago this day. You picked the Star Spangled Banner over us? How dare you, sir?
I can't. And you know what? You even told me that this was the day. You told me hours ago, but I was excited to be able to sing on a podcast that I had to... I had to pick my thing over your thing.
How is there not the anniversary song? Like, how do they do the happy birthday song? There's no anniversary song.
There should
song.
Be. Yeah, there's no anniversary song.
Get to work on that, people.
Happy anniversary to... Right. No, it doesn't work. Exactly. And plus, now we owe dollars. So let's, talk Manuel. About what's
He's
on your watch list.
The most prolific one we know.
What are you watching right now, Kyle? Because you're so chatty. You go first.
Sure. Yeah, Rob is also on the show. I swear. He's here.
Rob is also present.
Hello.
Oh
yeah.
The big thing is that I have seen the future. I have seen the Batman.
Oh, you already did it. I already did it. Little skunk.
I did. I went to a fan first screening at the AMC and saw it in IMAX. It was very loud, but it was really good. And it was a packed
house. And so long. It's like 9 hours long, right?
It is 3 hours long, but it mm-hmm. does not feel like it. I mean,
that's good.
Yeah,
news.
Like we were about, like, we're sort of going along, and it is a dense movie in terms of, like, there's a lot of plot stuff going on, but it is very clear. Like, I never got to a point where I was like, no, what's happening? Who is he fighting? What's going on? Like, I was always like, oh, okay, he's following this trail. And now you just talk to this guy. I mean, like, it's a really strong detective story because it's Batman, like, in the world of Seven. Like, I mean, there's basically a serial killer who's out there, and all of Batman's gadgets and all the Batmobiles in the world can't stop because he can't find this guy. So he really has to follow all these clues. So you get to see Batman really working harder than he has in all the previous movies because he can't just punch a bunch of ninjas. Like, he really has to do the full detective work in order to get there. And seeing him and Commissioner Gordon together more than I think they've been in any other thing, like side by side working the case. It's really good. I think the first time when I sort of like became aware that this was a different movie is there's a crime, and you see in the preview, there's a crime scene. Someone has been killed and the cops are all there everywhere. And Batman just walks into the crime scene, just through the front door, walks in. And it was like, okay. I haven't seen this before.
This is not the kind of thing I expect.
Yeah, there's no smoke bomb. There's no, like, you turn around and he's there. Like, it's just like he just, as a guy, just sort of walks in. All the cops are like, we just gonna let him?
Yeah, they are my street clothes.
Yeah.
What of it?
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing I think that I really care about, you have piqued my interest with Batman in Seven. Like, that I think is interesting.
Yeah.
That's like a two great tastes that may very well go great together. But the big question is, do I get a thumbs up, thumbs down on Pattinson?
Oh, he's very, very good. The previews, I think, have been poorly sound balanced because everyone was complaining about, oh God, it's gonna be another swear to me, you know, like that kind of thing where, like, there's the scene where he pounds against the glass and says, and everybody's like, oh
yeah.
And like, I can tell you, having me in the IMAX with their sound cranked way up, it is really clear. I'm a big sound guy and I could hear everything. I could understand him every single time. And he doesn't do a full on Christian Bale growly voice, but he's doing a thing, but it's very clear and easy to understand.
It's his thing.
And it's sort of like he's really so good in this that I couldn't see him as Robert Pattinson. Like, all the stuff I know about Robert Pattinson as he's going along and he takes the mask off, dude, I had a hard time seeing him as the same guy who was in the Twilight movies and Lighthouse and all these things. He really creates his own thing. I was really, really impressed with it. Actually, everybody in this, like, universally. And there's some people in this movie that you don't know are in this movie. Unless you go onto IMDb and scan down to it, there are people they have not talked about at all who are major players in this mystery. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know you were in this movie. That's exciting.
It sounds like you're dare I say it? Are you a fan?
I am a fan. I am super
fantastic.
Impressed. And one more thing, and I know because we have other things people want to talk about, and we have a whole other show that'll be talking about the Batman. Matt Reeves has really stepped up his game in this, in that he almost has, like, taken the idea of, like, GoPro cinematic and put it into action movies. So Al's action is shot low and intensely. So you see stuff and you've never seen before, like a camera strapped to the side of the Batmobile as it's going through and dodging between trucks and explosions and stuff. Or I think my favorite shot in the movie, he actually has a shot of almost next to Batman's head. Like you see the GoPro guys jumping off of buildings and having the camera on their face. He does that with Batman when he grapples up It's so cool. And because and just because of the way it's there, Batman's slightly out of focus, but you can see all this. It's actually inside a building. You can see all the stuff around him as he's shooting up the top. I mean, like, we've seen that shot in a bunch of the movies, but never from this perspective. And it was like one of these things where it sort of wakes you up and goes, oh, wow. Like, he found new ways to do stuff we've seen in how many Batman movies and, you know, 9 Batman movies and how many series. And I think, like, he found new angles, new ways to do stuff. I was really impressed at how much cinematic work he put into it, not just in terms of his story.
Yeah. Kabasco, when are you going to see it? And are you going to be cosplaying?
Cosplaying my egg, I was going to do a reverse egghead and somebody said, no, it came off looking too Humpty Dumpty. the end of next week.
End of next
is my plan to go see it. End of next week. I can't, this weekend is packed. A lot of stuff happening. So it will probably be the end, like Thursday or Friday. I think my wife and I are going
to
go to
Sorry, you have to wait so long.
But you know what? I've watched a couple of non-spoiler reviews. Everyone is glowed about it that I have watched. So I'm excited. I'm excited. I have my interest in where they're going to go.
Me too. That was a good plug earlier, Kyle. Thank you. We are doing a show. We're recording a show. As you are listening to this, if you're a member, we're recording this evening. You can join us on the live stream. Ocean is going to be hosting me and Tommy Metz III on a discussion of The Batman. Rob, what are you watching?
This is going to be a little pathetic.
Still Boston Legal?
We're almost done with Boston Legal. So yeah, we're almost done. Almost done. But John Larroquette, I'm still loving John Larroquette. They just presented against the Supreme Court, which, by the way, I forgot about that episode where they try to save the life of a guy who's on death row. And the people that they got to play the actual Supreme Court members at the time was really interesting. Put that aside. My wife is ready now to dive into Brothers and Sisters.
Okay. Which
there's a show that no one's heard of from a long time. Sally Field, Rob Lowe, when the Lion's Den bombed, and then he went off to do that. We tried to watch. Okay, so here's the deal. We tried to watch Free Guy.
Okay.
We got 20 minutes in. We got 20 minutes in. No, not interested.
Really?
We both just said no. Nah. That was it. I probably should finish that. The thing that was interesting, what caught our eye in this world of streaming, was the Charlie's Angels Full Throttle sequel. And we started watching it and we forgot how much we love the movie. We forgot how funny it is. And we also forgot how that movie can never be made, at least for the next 20 years. It is wildly inappropriate. Like, it's unbelievable. And I don't mean it's not like the girls and stuff. Just there are things that happen in the first 10 minutes that we both just sat on our couch and just went, that's hilarious.
And
our kids would not find any of that funny. They would be horrified. And it was just really kind of amusing.
Boy, whatever happened to McG? He was such a big deal.
Yes.
J.J. Abrams of his time. And then just poof.
Well, I need to talk to you about, I need to talk to you about something that I watched. And I'm an island on this one. It is a 1.5-star review in a sea of 3.5 and better. And I am so confused as to why this movie has achieved any sort of anything. But appropriate, because you watched The Batman, I'm talking about another Zoe Kravitz vehicle, Kimmy. Have you seen Kimmy, either of you?
I saw the preview for it.
Okay. It is... Do either of you deal with smart speakers? Do you have a smart speaker?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
As we're talking right now, Google is listening in. And then I will get recommendations based on what we talk about today.
Describing how reliable it is to you right now, I'm sure.
Well, I wouldn't say reliable. I'd say relentless.
I have many. They're in every room. And so you can say at normal voice the trigger words and it will listen and respond. And it's great because I have a lot of light bulbs in my house. So my entire house can be kind of a floating aura of lights, depending on where you are and what you say. But I will tell you, it is not as reliable as this movie wants me to think it is. Of course, it is a separate speaker, the Kimmy speaker, and there are just, it is such a frustrating, to me, I saw it as an incredibly frustrating, technophobic look at at, you know, home intelligence, and it drove me completely bananas. I think the character that Kravitz plays is really interesting. She makes some fantastic choices in terms of tics and her, like, she's dealing with emotional issues. She's clearly got some sort of spectrum neurodiversity going on, and her choices, I think, were generally really good. The rest of the film is it's trying to capture this sort of Rear Window kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. It mostly just reads that that, you know, Soderbergh is terrified of the future, which I know is not the case. I know it's not the case, but it doesn't telegraph in this movie. The most frustrating thing, I go in and I tell my own speaker, I say, hey, you know, whatever your name is, do this thing. And my speaker will say to me something just like, did you mean living room? Just not even what I actually, my wife and I were standing there talking. We said, hey, please send a message to our daughter. Normally we can do that, you know, no trouble. And just out of nowhere, some software update happens and it literally says to us, before you can send water bottle a message, you'll have to turn on personal requests on the phone I've just sent you. Who's sending anything to water bottle? And in the climax of this ridiculous movie, there is enough time, bad guys and prisoners, captured protagonists in the same room, and there's enough time for our captured protagonists to say not one thing, not two things or three things, but four things to the smart speaker, to turn on a song, to turn on the volume, to turn off the lights, four things before the bad guys even stop and say, hey, wait, shut up and shoot them. Like, it is forehead-slappingly bad architecture of action sequences. I did not care for it a bit. And the world disagrees, and I find that frustrating. So it is as bad as Lucy.
There are more
Remember Lucy
out there than you thought.
Oh, did you see Lucy where she turns into a USB stick at the end? I wanted to go out and run myself over with my own car. It was so stupid.
You know, the thing is, we're all of a certain age, and like I feel like when the internet first became a thing, we lived through these movies then. There was The Net, and there was Lawnmower Man. There's like all this stuff about like the internet's coming, it's gonna get you. And now the same thing, it's like smart speakers are coming, they're gonna get you. And it's like, that's why I don't tend to watch any of those movies, because I'm like, I've seen this every time that there's a, like, I'm super excited about the future of self-driving cars. Like, I think that it could be an entire game-changing thing, which I know this is not the podcast to discuss that. But then when I saw Fast and Furious and they turned them into like all these like, you know, remote control bombs, I'm like, please don't do that
like, to us. Yeah.
You know, there could be so much good, but if you keep doing it, like, now we're going to have a new version of Christine where a Tesla is going to be hunting people down. Yeah. I'm like, please don't do that.
Oh,
please.
You bet it is. It's going to be the car that actually drops the pig blood at the prom. It's going to be a whole thing. Don't even.
I guess I'm too much of a techno positivitist. I don't know. Like I see really more good things of technology. That whenever I see these things, I'm like, this seems like it's that boomer millennial thing of just like, oh, I don't understand this technology, but I bet it's bad, and we're gonna make a movie where it shows people dying.
I know how to write, how to get people scared of it. I sure know how to do that. Yeah, it makes me look crazy. You know, part of it is, if you're going to write something about, you know, fear of technology, I totally get that. Sure. Let's at least try to make it a little bit believable. And I think, you know, you look at a movie like another Soderbergh movie, you look at Contagion and what he did for disease, and I think that is a movie that gets it right. And we know it's right because we're living through it. Like, that is a thing that actually worked out well. This does not for me. And so it hurt my feelings a little bit. The movie. So anyway, none of that matters as much as we have an answer to what happens when the Marvel's small screen shows that were on Netflix leave Netflix. Boys, are you excited about this? I know how much you loved Luke Cage.
I've talked a lot. Rob?
No, I you know what? When I saw this, Kyle had posted it. I thought this was great. For me, I think the most exciting part of this is that we have an answer as to what mature content is going to exist on Disney Plus in the domestic market in the U.S.
Yeah, do you want to talk a little bit about how they're going to handle this? Do you have that clear?
Did you see, Kyle? You got that.
I do. This is something we've been talking about since the very beginning, because Disney has this vast catalog of stuff, and if they're going to have it just family-friendly, there's a lot of stuff they can't show. But if they want it to be this incredible juggernaut that's going to destroy Netflix, which I think is what they want, they have to have an age gate. And so that's one of the things that's coming. Was it because of the Defenders and the whole thing? I don't know, but here it comes. So on the 15th, when all of the Netflix Marvel shows move over to Disney Plus, and for the first time, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will be showing up on there too. So another hoorah. And we just got to get, Runaways and Cloak and Dagger on there, and we'll have the whole set. But and Hellstrom. But so now that they have that in place, that you can set it just like I think almost everyone else has this technology built in. Now Disney was sort of late to do it, but now they do it. But now that they have a thing saying this is adult and over, because most of those shows are rated R shows. I mean, The Punisher is coming to Disney Plus.
Right.
From this. Then now we can have Aliens. Now we can have Die Hard.
Daredevil.
Now we can have, we can have Deadpool.
Deadpool. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like all of those things can now come to Disney Plus because Disney owns them all. Yeah. And now they have a way to show them without, having the kids stumble over going like, oh, I like superheroes. What's this Deadpool?
And it sounds like what they're doing is for this is that it's going to be like an opt-out process.
Yeah.
So that when the day that this makes available, everyone who logs in, no matter what device, whatever you're doing with your account, you will all be presented with the way for you to set pins for each one of your profiles, for you to make all those choices, whoever the owner is. And I would assume that if you've already set up a kid account for kid access, it's going to prevent you from any of that stuff. You know what I mean? Like you're going to have to release that either through a pin or through some other selection process. So it's interesting that they've done it in a way because I'll tell you, when we heard all the information about what was happening overseas with Disney Plus, for those who don't know, that there was a new block on the Disney main menu system. And it was just Star?
Yeah.
Was like it, which not very creative. they never used my Walt's Closet idea, but
that
whatever.
Was good. We were proud of you.
Right. So the vault, that they're not doing that. That it sounds like, I mean, I don't know, maybe someday I would think you'll see a 20th Century Fox somewhere, but maybe not. Maybe this is just, we're going to release all this stuff and you will have a ground level entryway to decide whether or not you see that content or not.
Yeah. So on or after March 16th, this will happen for all U.S. subscribers. If you are the primary subscriber, as Rob has said, you will be able to choose the content setting of TVMA on every profile on the account as account owner. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to worry about the kiddies seeing the brains on the signposts. And so that is very exciting. You guys have seen all of the properties, right?
I have now. Yes.
You have now. That was your big pandemic project, was watch all the stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also when I caught the COVID and I had to be isolated for 5 days, I binged on everything so I watched all of the what we used to be called we have to have a better term, the Defenderverse. Like it can't be the Netflix shows anymore because they're not on Netflix anymore.
Don't we're not just calling them street level heroes? That's a little bit, that's okay. a little bit long in the tube. Is
a street level hero?
Well, that doesn't count because that wasn't the early days, the before days.
That's true.
The before times. Anyway, we also had, Rob, you posted about the SAG Award winners. You want to talk about that?
So here's the three takeaways I had from this. Screen Actors Guild, Apple TV Plus, or just Apple, came away big. Ted Lasso, Coda, big winners. I guess I have to question, here's my second point. Is Succession good? Because I mean, it won and I have not watched a single episode. Like I would assume it's good. Here's my third point. Why is the Squid Game? Why? I tried. I don't understand here's the deal. I understand, thing of the moment. Everyone wants to watch it. They watch it. They burn through it. And that's it. It won a bunch of awards. Really?
Yeah.
I'm confused.
I'm with you on Succession where I just don't get it. Like and it's fine. Like I'm not saying anything bad about it. I look at the preview and go, that is not for me. But I have watched Squid Game and I can tell you that it is very high quality television. Like it's not just just like that, like something that came through and that is made on an extremely high level of quality. Yeah. It's not just they weren't just lucky; they were really, really good.
Interesting. Okay,
I can't. This is one that I can't comment on. I haven't seen either of them. I am told by people I trust, and now Kyle too, that these things that both of these properties are really they're really good properties, and they're quality. production and in the case of Succession, writing. And as somebody who is just about finished with The Morning Show season 2 and regrets it, I look forward to those kinds of things. This is not like something like Tiger King, which I wear as a badge of honor that I haven't seen any of Tiger King. And so I'm okay with that, not being a part of that. But Succession and of course I'm a real Lasso, big fan of Ted Lasso, and that Troy Kotsur won for Coda. Outstanding supporting performance, which I think is just such a stellar feel good film. And has really stuck around for us. So,
I'm thrilled to see them get some love. The only two things, I guess, then is that Ted Lasso winning, of course, is great. It's too bad that it has to be in the same category as Only Murders in the Building. Yeah. I would have loved to have seen that get some love.
Yeah,
because it does. I really, honestly, think deserved it.
It beat itself, especially best performance with having both Steve Martin and Martin Short. Nobody's gonna.
But the two of them, if one got it and the other one did it, the other one would never have let them live it down.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Right. And to save a friendship.
And I'm already, I'm Rob Kabasco-ing myself because Ted Lasso was nominated twice, Brett Goldstein and Jason Sudeikis, and Sudeikis won. So, of course, that didn't.
Wait, what does that mean, Rob Kabasco?
No, it just became a thing. Respect. It became a thing in my
head. It's like Smurf. Wow. You can just put it in anywhere. And
okay. All right. Okay. I understand where we're going with this. We don't want to Kabasco yourself all over the place. I understand.
Do you see how easy it is? You did it yourself and it still sounded completely normal.
I know. One other thing I just want to say, though, too, is on the with Squid Game winning. Okay, this is such a weird category. It's now stunt ensemble in a comedy or drama series.
Which is great. I would have loved to finally get awards.
No, of course. But in that running, you had Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Mare of Easttown, Cobra Kai, and Loki. And I would have loved to have seen Loki get some love.
Yes.
That's all.
My only takeaway from the SAG was because dreams tend to come true. So if you can go out and find a really powerful female athlete, and it may be even better if there's two, and somehow recenter their story on a man, you too can win a SAG award. So dream big, people.
Yeah, that smarts.
Well, they're royalty. He's royalty. Yeah,
right, so exactly. On. People love them royals.
Jeez. All right. Let's do trailers.
Let's do it.
We don't have an A24 trailer this week, I believe. We also do not have a Red Band trailer this week. I do have a particular bone to pick, which I will hold for my opportunity to talk about my third place trailer.
That's third right. place.
While Pete is holding his bone, Rob.
Who knew? Wait, when have I ever? Well, again, don't Kabasco yourself. Let's just say, who went in my first? Never. And when I saw this, I jumped all over this. This is In Search of Tomorrow.
What's going to happen?
Something wonderful.
1980 science fiction has all of those elements that make greatness in cinema and storytelling.
It changed everything. And I loved it.
We felt so creative and we were so loose.
Wow, what a great concept.
It's the positiveness that made for repeat viewing.
It's timeless. Knock me out.
Surpasses our brains and goes straight to our hearts.
Sci-fi truly came of age and exploded in the 80s.
It's time to start running!
The whole audience for science fiction came alive.
It's a ripe genre, full of twists and offshoots.
It was sci-fi movies that you began to take seriously.
Showing people the dysfunction that we were headed for.
I was the ultimate tough guy.
I ain't got time to bleed.
It just comes together as a thrill ride. What pulp does best.
Badass sci-fi.
Yeah. It still plays.
All right. So real quick, what is this? This is a documentary about 80s science fiction films. It is made by the same director who did a previous one called In Search of Darkness, which studied 1980s horror films. This is a crowdfunded slash crowd sold documentary. It comes out digitally in April. It will be available on Blu-ray in May. You can get your copy, order your copy now by 80scifidoc.com by March 27th. What did you all think of this?
It has all of the people in it. Wondering as I was watching it, this isn't a trailer. They're just going to do the whole movie. Like this trailer never ended. Like it was the longest trailer I think we've had.
Well, it's like a 3.5 minutes, almost a 4 minute trailer.
It felt like it was good, but it's like a 9-part series, right? That is just talking heads of my favorite people in science fiction from my favorite times in science fiction filmmaking production. So I thought it was fantastic. It really knows its audience. I thought you have me already. Stop talking.
And I thought it was amazing when you saw Ivan Reitman's in it, Ivan Reitman. So, and that's great to see that they got him in this on that. I mean, everyone, like literally think of an 80s science fiction movie. It's in this. The two people that blew me away is that they got both Peter Weller and Nancy Allen.
Peter Weller's a catch.
Nancy Allen is ready for a reboot. Get them in. Like, you can totally do that. Netflix has got some money.
Yeah.
Do Robo, I don't know, RoboCop 2049.
Well, they had Dee Wallace in there. We've had Dee Wallace on a couple of shows that we do. She's a wonderful, wonderful asset to science fiction horror filmmaking history. That was a real treat. I think it looks great. I'm sorry, Kyle, interrupted you.
Yeah, this is fun.
No, I'm so excited about this sort of new wave of like pop documentaries maybe it's just because there are things that I love and now that people are making documentaries about the things I love. So it gives me a chance to revisit things I love. But there's been a lot of them coming out. There was the great one they did about DS9. There's the Wolfman's Got Nards. That was about Monster Squad and the Phantom there. Ringers. I mean, like there's been all these
Galaxy Quest.
Oh, yeah.
There's a Galaxy Quest one.
We went and saw that. I can't remember the name of that one. It's on Hulu. But yeah, that was a fantastic one. That like raised the bar. So just seeing that trend is continuing makes me happy. And yeah, and just the amount of people they were able to get on this is just astounding to me. Like, I wish it was a series. I wish this was like Pete said, I wish this was 9 episodes, each one about one of these properties, but I'm so glad it got made. I'm hoping they get to do more.
Well, and it's awesome. Available. Like, you can order it now, right? That's what we're.
Yes.
It's immediate.
Yeah, you can. And they've got a great little package. I think it's like 60, 70 bucks. I've got the Blu-ray coming with a poster, a whole bunch of like prints that they're including in it.
Peter Weller delivers it to your house, I think.
Yeah,
he does. Yes. Takes you out for some psychotropics and an espresso.
I'm looking forward to this. I can't wait. I think I'm going to completely enjoy this, and I think a lot of people will too.
Me too. All right, Kyle, cool. Who beat me, I think, by a matter of seconds. Posting this trailer in the second spot. Yeah, I mean, it came out and I saw it and I knew because I knew Robin Cabasco'd himself by picking his trailer on Tuesday. Who does that? A rube picks his trailer on Tuesday. More trailers come out throughout the week. So I knew it. Excited. And then I saw this trailer and I thought, it's going to be Kyle, my Newman.
That's right. Cause I went on and put it in the sheet immediately. And then I left it and then went back to like, I think I put the name of it in and my name and I went back to copy paste the URL and below my name was, damn you, Kyle. Because there is an exciting new Brad Pitt action movie coming out and it's called Bullet Train.
Talk to me.
I am ready. You are getting the new and improved me. Because if you put peace out in the world, you get peace back.
I think you might be forgetting what you do for a living. Take the gun.
Every job I do, somebody dies. I'm not that guy anymore.
Some conflicts require a gun.
Hey, this is nice. Okay, what am I snatching and or grabbing?
A briefcase.
You said you wanted simple for your first job back.
Doesn't get simpler.
Sorry, she's been dead. you stab me?
So I love these, you know, sort of hyper stylized, over the top action movies. Like that, you can have your grim and gritty stuff. That's fine. I love a John Wick, but like when they have real bright personalities and bright colors and, you know, over the top action stuff, I am on board from the start. And I like seeing Brad Pitt having fun in movies again, because he had that long period where it's all this serious, socially relevant kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, like, but like, do you remember when you were in True Romance? Do you remember when you were in 12 Monkeys? Like, you used to have fun in movies. Like, you could do that again. And now it seems like he's coming back around to that. So, from the director of Deadpool 2, which had some fun action stuff, is it going to be a smart, clever, full of witty references? No, but it's going to be like these great actors having fun and crazy stylish action. I can't wait. What'd you guys think?
The best action movie that has ever taken place on a train, fight me if you want, is Under Siege 2 Dark Territory. And I just want to say, it's not Snowpiercer, stop. But I just want to say,
it's not a step up movie.
Okay. I may talk about that later. Here's the deal. I mean, because I love the train, the whole concept, yeah. Right? This is a crazy, psychedelic, neon, modern take. It looks fantastic. And I'm even half joking on the Under Siege 2 reference. Mm-hmm. This trailer ends with a sequence that's like right out of that movie. It's really funny. Yeah, I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I think Brad Pitt, awesome. To your point, like if anybody has earned making this kind of movie, of yes. his caliber of actor, he really has earned this. He looks like he's having an absolute blast, and I'm here for it. I really like him in these kinds of action movies. I loved him in World War Z, but mm-hmm. this gets to that kind of flamboyance, that sort of frivolousness of the way it's written and the way the violence appears to be playing out in the movie that I think is right up my alley. I'm absolutely here for it, and it's this summer, right? When does it drop?
Yeah, July.
I'm totally here for it. Bullet Train. Wish it could have been my pick, because instead I have to pick. I like the trailer that I picked, because I got to watch Rob watch the trailer, and that we should keep that as a bonus feature, just watching Rob talk his way through Uma.
Mom, what is this?
We need more colonies.
But that's a lot more work.
But it's nothing the two of us can't handle together.
Your life is so retro. Do you even have a phone?
No.
So how do you talk to your friends?
My mom is my friend.
Stop! Turn it off! Who are you?
네 엄마가 돌아가셨다. 이 가방 속에 있는 한 엄마는 더 커질 거다.
No! Get out of my house.
도대체 어떤 딸이 네 엄마를 버리고 떠나니? 응?
What's in the suitcase? What's going on? I'm fine. I'm just worried about you.
I said I'm fine.
Who is this woman?
That's my Oma.
That was all she had.
I remember so much. Screaming.
I didn't want you to know her.
Why?
Some Koreans believe that life's hardships are caused by the tormented spirits of their ancestors.
Amanda, you okay?
I think there's something wrong. Is this what you want? A final resting place?
Uma, I for those who don't know, if you're listening to this show, you might know already that I am a giant fan of Relic. Are you guys Relic fans?
Oh,
Relic.
There's been a couple movies. There's Relic and The Relic. Which one?
This is just Relic, and that's important because Relic, written by Natalie Eric James and directed also by Natalie Eric James, stars Emily Mortimer, Bella Heathcote, and Robin Nevin. And it is a three-generational story of women coming to terms with aging and death and Alzheimer's. And also it is a fantastic horror movie that is super cerebral and creepy, creepy, creepy. And we actually have a design in our merch store, truestory.fm/DNRmerch, where you can get the iconic stained glass window that is just being eaten by black mold. And that's an image directly from the movie. Relic is fantastic. So I love these movies where family members have to come to terms with some massive transitional element in their lives. And in Relic, it is mother and three generations of mother. And then we get Uma, which is Sandra Oh and her daughter, who it appears to that they have a very close relationship. I think her daughter's probably 28, 30, and they're still, I guess, co-sleeping and raising bees. And then they find out that this third generation mother's, Sandra Oh's mother, has already died and her remains are delivered. That we learn all that in the trailer. And as it plays out, it is absolutely the unveiling of the horrors of family as told through the horrors of the big screen. And I am here for it. What'd you guys think?
I love a horror movie that has something to say, like that. They when they take something, you know, the idea of the stereotypical overprotective or controlling mother, and it's just like, and she's gonna keep coming even though she's dead. She's still gonna be judging your actions. She's gonna be with you no matter what you do, and taking that and then sort of expanding it out into a horror kind of thing. The trailer has the requisite amount of thrills and chills and creepy imagery. I was already checked out when they got to bees. Like, no thanks. Oh,
okay. Okay.
But, as far as I consider, Sandra Oh can do no wrong. So I'm so glad that she gets to be, like, you know, top billed and get a really cool and freaky looking movie all of her own.
Rob, how'd you do?
I love, I've missed Sandra Oh. I totally love, what was the Robert Wurr show on HBO?
Arliss.
Oh, yeah. I loved her on Arliss. So, because that's one of her early things.
That was pre-Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, for me, it's always Grey's Anatomy and Sideways. I'm such a Sideways fan.
I think that's great for her. It had all of that. I really appreciate seeing the cultural significance, too, that the mother plays. And I think that they're obviously going to go a little bit deeper on that. I allowed myself to really get into it. You watched me watch the trailer for the first time, and there were a few moments. Let's just say... if you like little birds,
Oh, it's a little bird. That's okay.
No,
that I believe is a direct quote of Rob Kubasco.
Even the bird gets it.
This movie opens in just a couple of weeks in theaters on March 18th in the U.S. UK gets it on the 25th. April and it looks like Australia, April and May in Australia on internet. Don't know why they get streaming and we get exclusive theatrical. Enjoy it. Uma, Sandra Oh, let's play a game. Gentlemen, the game we are playing today is called Castle. Now, what is Castle? I'm so glad you asked. I am a slave to pop culture gaming trends on the internet. And as you know, one of the big ones right now today is Wordle. Are you familiar with Wordle?
Why, yes, I am.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
I'm familiar with
it. Outstanding. So Wordle, the game Wordle, you have a 5x5, 6x5 grid? I can't even remember now. But anyway, the idea with Wordle is you play a word, and in each square, as you play the word, letters that are in the final word that you're trying to guess will show up as red or green or yellow. If the letter is not in the word, you don't get any points for it. And the green letters tell you that you have the letter in the right place and the letter is in the word. So the next word that you play in the list will have to actually include that letter in the same place. And eventually you have, you know, five or six tries to get to the actual word of the day. And the beauty of it is everybody is playing the same board on any given day. So there is one Wordle word that everybody on the planet who plays Wordle is trying to guess using this mechanic. Well, I decided that I thought it would be fun to play Wordle, but with film casts. And so I have built, gentlemen, a game board, and that game board shows five rounds So we have five rows of possible combinations of actors that were all in a movie together, and five columns where we can see each actor in that column. So you can put any combination of five actors together, and then we will reveal which actors are correct, they're green, which actors are not in the film, or which actors are in the film but not in the correct place. Now, what determines...
That part is what I don't quite get.
What determines correct place? As with most things on this show that are ultimately nonsense, I went with IMDb order.
Oh,
IMDb order. So that's the order. You also have to try to game IMDb order. Now...
Which is not always by billing.
No. Sometimes it's alphabetical. Sometimes it's... I will tell you, in this case, for this game, I have taken IMDb order from the very first entry in the cast list, okay? So I didn't, like, take random five people from the middle of the cast list, right? Like, cab driver one, cab driver two, cab... I didn't do that. So these are, in the movies that we've chosen for today, these are principal performers.
So if this was When Harry Met Sally, Rob Reiner's mother wouldn't be in the top five.
No, we wouldn't get to Rob Reiner's mother. Right. So now what you are looking at on screen, which is what the listeners at home cannot see, you will see the game board at the very top of my window. It's in a spreadsheet. And then below that, you'll see a draft. Oh, look, you can actually see what you're looking at here. you can actually see the draft. And that's just where I type in, because what I've discovered is if I type on the actual game board, autofill gives away the answer. So I have a separate spreadsheet for the draft, and below that is the score sheet. And the score sheet works like this. You can see that the lowest score wins. So if you guess in one, then you get 1 point. And then I keep adding points for each additional round it takes you to guess the final movie. Okay?
Okay, so our goal is to get the movie. Yes. Not to get the cast in the correct order.
Well, cast in the correct order gets you bonus points.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So you have to decide.
What is our potential for each point total for each?
Five total points, but I will give you over. So you could get 100%, but you could actually get 110% if you get more than 5 points on any given round.
That's not going to happen.
I can't wait to see what happens in this game. Now, I will tell you one other thing. I have handicapped every single round here by giving you one name that is, you will see, green. And I am considering round one our test round.
Okay.
Right? So this is just a sample round to get you started so you understand what the mechanic of the game is. Are you ready to play round one?
I think I already have it.
Let's pretend you don't.
Wait, are we working together or taking turns?
You're working together. Right? So what you need to do is you're telling me, first off, you're giving me five people that you think are in this movie, and I can already tell you that in place four is Colin Farrell.
Yes. So I would say Robert Pattinson, Zoe Kravitz, Jeffrey Wright, Colin Farrell, and then I don't know what the fifth one would be.
Colin Farrell, and you just give me a name. See what it is.
Who would be? Paul Dano.
Okay. So we have now your sample that you would like to play is Robert Pattinson, Zoe Kravitz, Jeffrey Wright, Colin Farrell, and Paul Dano. Yes. Let us go to the game board.
I'm guessing that it's the Batman. Let's see.
You have just gotten all greens, sir.
No points.
All greens. So you have this is a test round. So you get absolutely nothing. But well done. You have you're the first kid with his hand up in class that is about to be beaten up at recess. Okay.
Yeah, actually,
we did great.
Rob, did you understand that?
Rob is present.
Okay, yeah.
I guess we could have made some mistakes to show you what happens if we don't get it.
We did. We are awesome.
Okay. So here's what we have for round two. This is the first round that counts for points. We have a blank board. Round two, in the third position marked as correct, is one Robin Wright.
Okay, so third position, Robin Wright. Rob, I think we should start with Princess Bride. So I'm guessing top billing would be Carrie Elwes.
Yeah.
Okay, and then Mandy Patinkin.
Yeah.
All right, and then Boy. Yeah, would Billy Crystal be next?
Or
would
Andre the Giant?
Well, or yeah, but this is billing. So like, would he be in the top five, or would it be
oh no, he's in the five. I would put him at five.
Chris Sarandon. I think Chris Sarandon is probably in the top five.
Okay.
Okay, that's what you're gonna go with?
Yeah. So are you okay with
all
that?
All right, sure.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, gentlemen. That is for Reds still. Robin Wright is correct. So I think you can make a safe assumption. This is not Princess Bride.
It's not Princess Bride.
Okay, another Robin Wright movie.
Hey, this is really well done, by the way. I just want to tell you that.
Thank you.
But actually, we're on screen. We are seeing things turn red and green. This is
This is amazing. Okay.
I spent way too much time on it. Thanks for noticing.
Yeah.
What can you?
Okay, what else? What else?
Robin Wright was in Forrest Gump.
I was going to say Forrest Gump. You want
to say Tom Hanks?
Tom Hanks.
Gary Sinise.
Who played
Sally Field?
Oh, Sally Field, and then who was the guy who played Bubba?
Michael T. Williams. His name is Michael T. Like Michael T. Not Michael. T. It's
right.
Michael
T. McKelty.
And it's with a K.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you won't count us against your spelling, will you?
Well, spelling matters.
Well, of course it will.
This isn't. Wait. No.
Oh, no.
Oh, it wasn't Forrest Gump. You are off to round three.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a hint now that we're in round three. The hint is this movie was released in 2017.
Oh, it's recent. And
I'm going to let you tell me if you would like me to handicap you one more name.
I would like him to handicap us one more name.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
Oh, dear. Okay. Okay. I'll even give you position four. Position four is Mark Arnold. That helps you not at all, I wager.
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
It is these positions one and two are the big giveaways. Positions one and two.
I'm sure the audience is screaming ass right now, but I feel like those are the only two Robin Wright movies I've actually seen.
I guarantee you that's not correct.
Oh,
wow.
Okay. Oh, my God. I am the biggest idiot in the world.
Well, because
she was an Amazon, Rob. This is Wonder Woman.
Oh, wait. So, are you serious?
Gal Gadot, Chris Pine.
Chris Pine.
Robin Wright. We're assuming it's the first Wonder Woman. And then, obviously, Mark Arnold we have. And then
I totally
he was in the Thewlis, David Thewlis.
Oh yeah, I was thinking of his Harry Potter from Harry Potter.
Yeah, well, Robin Wright had so transformed herself. Oh wow, it is not Wonder Woman.
It is not Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman.
Okay, we're back. We haven't seen a whole lot of Robin Wright. Wait, what? Wait, I'm trying to think. 2017.
Mark Arnold. I was thinking Mark Strong. No, it's Mark Arnold.
I will tell you. Guy. I'll give you one more hint. This was this was one of the. It was a sequel. It is a sequel to a very old classic, cult classic. Not even a cult classic anymore. It's a massive, massive science fiction hit. This was the sequel. After many, many, many years.
Oh, was she in Blade Runner 2049? Which I have not seen. Even though I love Denise Villeneuve, I have not seen.
Fascinating.
Do we just throw in then? Well, we know the names that we can use for that.
So obviously, who gets top billing? I guess the goose himself, Ryan Gosling, probably has top billing, I would think.
Oh.
And then Harrison Ford. And then the Joker? What's from Justice League? This is how my mind works. 30 Seconds to Mars guy. What's his?
Oh my God!
We live in a society,
Jared Leto.
Bob.
Jared,
come on,
Jared Leto.
Thank you.
This is fascinating. Well, this is a fascinating turn of events.
Okay.
What?
All right.
Would you like to make a guess, or would you like to continue this march?
Well, it's Ryan Gosling. I assume it is. Can we say yes, Blade Runner 2049?
You can say Blade Runner. Okay. It is Blade Runner 2049. I cannot believe that you haven't seen that, and I feel bad that I leaned in so heavily on, I guarantee you've seen this, like a real dope. I apologize.
No, it all seems like it would be within my
it sure does watching and I will tell you sure who does. You but, missed
and I own it. I bought it, never watched it.
Okay,
because I have such a love-hate relationship with Blade Runner. It's one of those things where everybody says it's the most amazing, it's fantastic. I've seen every cut of Blade Runner and I still watch it and go, I don't get it. Why do people love this movie? Same. I just don't.
Yeah,
well, let me tell you who you missed. In the fifth position, you missed Vilma Skezi, who was angry old lady, but in the second position was not Harrison Ford, it was Dave Bautista.
Wow.
Okay.
Let me tell you how much little I know about that movie. Did not know he was in it.
Round three, we have a blank board, and in the fourth position, we have Neil McDonough. Now, you do know who Neil McDonough is.
I do. I found out some interesting trivia about Neil McDonough this week. He won't kiss people on screen.
That is correct. He will not kiss on screen.
He has a very certain thing about he is incredibly faithful to his wife. He does not want to be seen with other women on screen. So,
isn't that interesting?
And the thing I saw was making fun of him about that, but I'm like, go Neil.
Yeah.
Way to stand up for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
No, it's all good.
Okay.
Neil McDonough. This is Captain America, the First Avenger.
Oh, I thought it was going to be one of the Bruce Willis movies from last year. Like, never mind.
Well, he's in fourth position here, so he would have been.
Oh, that's true. He'd be
second in one of those.
First or second.
All right. So that's my guess.
I'm very excited to see how this turns out for you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, Neil McDonough. I mean, I would think of him as Dum Dum Dugan. So that's what I was thinking. But do you know of any other Neil McDonough movies that would? He would be that.
I'm gonna mention a movie, and you'll be totally blown away that this is the movie I'm gonna pull. Star Trek: First Contact.
He was in First Contact.
Fascinating.
Yeah, he's the helmsman on the Enterprise. It's so ridiculous. I know that.
Wow. I'm gonna go ahead and give you, just so you know, I'm gonna give you the year. Okay. This movie was released in 2002. This is a film that comes from. It is science fiction. It is an adaptation. From a short story.
Once again, my knowledge of Neil McDonough movies.
That's why he's fourth position.
Short-lived show.
This is twisty. Much like
he was in Boomtown, which I really enjoyed that.
He was much like Wordle. You just have to get some names on the board.
Oh wait, he's not in the you know what movie? Okay, wait, no, he's not in.
It's not like Wordle. We have to put names on the board because you can do. I could do the cast of Ocean's 11 across here and it would not get me any closer.
Well, that's fascinating. That's fascinating you would say that.
What was the movie? Well, you said Keanu Reeves' Mnemonic Man.
Johnny Mnemonic.
That's not what I was thinking. But like I was thinking there was a sci-fi remake that Keanu Reeves did with John Hamm was in it too. It's the Day the Earth Stood Still. Was that it? With
vague memories of,
I never saw it, and like those are the two names that I can come up with, but I don't think putting those is going to really help us that much.
Okay, I think just because I'm learning about how the game works, I'm going to give you one more. I'm going to handicap you one more, and you can cut that. So I'm going to handicap you twice.
Okay. And handicap, but it actually is helping us.
Max von Sydow.
Yep.
Wow. Late great Max von Sydow. Well, it wouldn't be Flash Gordon, and it wouldn't be Judge Dredd, which are the two Max von Sydow movies I can think of. He'd been in. It wouldn't be Salem's Lot. It wouldn't be Force Awakens.
Way too early. Max von Sydow way too early.
That I would have seen. Well, I think
Revenge of the Sith hadn't come out yet.
He's not in Revenge of the Sith.
No, but I mean, it hadn't come out. He said it's 2002.
Yeah. This is a movie that has one of the most horrifying backroom operations I've ever seen.
Oh.
Big anxiety movie.
Oh, this is Minority Report. So
see, now I gave it away. Go ahead.
Can you
get him in the right order?
So Tom Cruise, and if you didn't give me that, I don't know. I can't think of anyone else who's in that movie.
Nothing.
No. Yeah, I got nothing. Okay, I had to stop talking about that movie just because my blood pressure would go up when I did. It made me so angry.
It is, in fact, Tom Cruise, Max von Sydow, Neil McDonough, and Steve Harris plays Jad in this movie. He's another one of the police officers, and he was one of the attorneys in the practice. And and so,
yes, that's right. I did. I kind of knew it was the practice, but I don't know any of the. I don't remember any names from the.
That's all right. Let's just see. This is. Let me see if I can give you something that you can chew on, and we can end Billy on a high Connelly. Note. This one is another adaptation from a novel.
I think I already know what it is.
Then I'll let you go.
I think it's Muppet Treasure Island.
However, would you start to build that cast?
Yeah, so I'm trying to think of what it would be. I mean, do you credit Muppets or do you credit performers? So I guess because Kermit is kind of like, you know, he's not really the lead, but I have no idea what the kid's name was.
All I will tell you here is I have only credited performers.
Would be top billing. So I say Tim Curry. These are all humans?
Humans. Yeah, I have credited only people.
Okay, so I mean like, and since Gonzo, would Dave Goles be the next name, or would they go by all the actors? Because
this might give you a hint. I don't know how to spell Dave Goles.
Okay, so probably not Dave Goles. The kid's mother was a British comedian. She was in Frances Saunders. Jennifer Saunders? There aren't a lot of humans in that movie.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I have vague recollections.
I'm going to go ahead and give you Muppet Treasure number Island. Three.
Okay.
Gerard.
Gerard Butler.
What? Oh, my God.
All right. So far, we've got Tim Curry, Jennifer Saunders, Gerard Butler, okay. Billy Connolly,
this is
and
not
Vivian number five.
Island, but we've come this far. Let's keep going. And then Gonzo the Great. Because this is wrong anyways. So.
Okay. Let's see if we can get you
on
the board.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, they're all wrong. Okay. So another
What year is this movie from?
He has not told us because I cut him off too soon.
I thought 2003. It's another early one.
Because he was Billy Bones, but that's not what we're talking about.
Okay. So yes, 2003. It has it boasts a cast of one name that has already been mentioned in this game. In a different round.
Okay.
And it also boasts a cast of an actor who is R.I.P.
Okay. So this wouldn't be 300 because Gerard Butler is third billed. He would have been first billed in that. It's not like Law Abiding Citizen because that's not adapted from anything. And he also would have been second billed after Jamie Foxx.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot. I just saw Cop Shop, and he was very good in that movie, but he would have been second billed in that. Mm-hmm. And it was not adapted from a book.
Is it? It's not Phantom of the Opera, though, either.
No, because he would have been top billed in that because he's
billing, right.
Title character.
Yeah.
And Emily Rossum's agent wasn't that powerful. I'm throwing out all this stuff to show just after the movie bona fides.
You do have bona fides. Oh, no. I mean, anybody doubts your bona fides. I do think that without getting that next clue of who else it could have been in that top billing, and if you didn't see this movie, then it's going to hurt your feelings a little bit. Let me give you one more.
It's not Boondock Saints or Boondock Saints 2, because Jerry Butler's not in either of them.
No.
Wait. Geostorm? But I guess Jerry Butler would probably be top billing.
He would be top billing. But let me tell you, now that you brought up Geostorm, you are in the caliber of movies that this one represents.
Okay. Boy, I'm saying like, Billy Connolly is really throwing me off because I thought he had sort of retired from movies by that point.
He was a kooky. I believe he was a kooky professor, I think.
Okay.
It's been a long time. Yes, he was a kooky professor.
If Geostorm was a clue, then like all the disaster things. So like Deep Impact?
No, because that's all 90s.
Okay, so I know he wasn't in like Independence Day. He wasn't in Volcano.
But in
Dante's
2002,
Peak.
He went back in time.
Timeline?
Hmm.
Timeline would have been the late great Paul Walker, and Oh, who was it? This was the guy where you had a handsome lead and then a quirky sidekick. So was it like a Steve Zahn type? But that's Sahara. Who would have been like his, like, we can't go back in time, bro? Like, who would have been that guy in that time? In that time
was period? His, we can't go back in time, bro.
Yeah, buddy. which if by Michael Crichton's rules, you're not going in time. You're traveling between different dimensions, which isn't time travel, which means anything you find there doesn't matter at all because it's a parallel dimension. Trying to be crazy. At least people understand multiverse now. We're going back to 14th century France. No, you're going to an alternate universe, which has which is another 14th century France. So it's like,
okay.
Yeah, sorry.
We've got a number two and a number five. Give me some more names. Right.
Steve Zahn.
Sure.
Why not?
Okay.
And there had to have been a woman in this movie, right?
You would think.
What's the most difficult name to spell, Rob? We'll make him have to do it. Jennifer Connelly. I have no idea. I'm trying to think who would have been working at this time period. That.
All right. Let's just see what comes up on the big board. Well, you got Paul Walker, okay. Gerard Paul Butler, Walker Billy right. Connolly.
So it is timeline.
It is timeline. And who timeline. Are okay, you so. Missing? You are missing who, Francis who O'Connor as his lady.
Oh,
come on. And David Thewlis.
David Thewlis again.
Yeah.
Oh, we're talking about David thing too. Thewlis.
Anna Friel. Neil McDonough is also in this movie. And so that was another tie-in.
So who was Paul Walker's, like... Who was like Paul Walker's
sidekick? I think that was Ethan Embry.
Yes, there you go. Ethan right? Embry. That's that time period. That would improve that in the Freaky Lynx times. That would have
been perfect. Right. Okay. I'm going to pull the plug because this is hard. This is hard, but
I got to tell you, you did such a, I'm amazed at how you got this to work with the colors. Build. Oh, wait, Rutger Hauer.
Do you want to do this last, just as one more, Rutger Hauer is second billed in this movie. Can you come up with any movie in which Rutger Hauer is second billed?
Lady Hawk.
And so build the cast for me.
Okay. it would have been Michelle Pfeiffer.
Top billing?
Would have been top billing, I would think.
Okay, do it. Keep going.
Okay, Rutger Hauer, from I'm thinking of him from Broadway, but from the producers on Broadway. And Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Matthew Broderick?
Matthew Broderick, yes. He was the guy, like the kid who was like helping them along. And then I have no idea who else was in that movie. I haven't seen it since I saw it in theaters in like 85 or whatever it is.
We're going to say Billy Connolly and Jennifer Connolly are both in this movie. And let's just see what happens. Curious. My gosh.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Matthew no Broderick way.
Had billing? Holy crap.
Well,
the
to
power
be fair,
of Ferris.
He had IMDb top billing. Right.
Okay.
Like
okay.
that's what.
Wow. What came
out. But the other who did you miss on this? Leo McKern was Imperius and John Wood was Bishop. No way. Wow. I don't think you would have gotten there.
Either of those.
That was actually a well played. And I did have one more. And the actor was Michael O'Keefe. What if I were to give you just one more name and see how quickly you can answer? We'll do a jump ball.
Okay.
And that is
Bill Murray, fifth?
Fifth billing, Bill Murray.
What? He played the gravedigger in a Hamlet adaptation. That would have been, he would have been that low on the cast sheet. It wasn't Bran Oz.
I don't know. Was it the, was I don't it know the if you're Ethan, thinking old
was it
enough.
The Ethan, was it the Ethan Hawke? Hamlet, that would like where he did the to be or not to be in the video store. Look at a videotape. He was in a Blockbuster, like picking up videotapes going to be or not to be. I know that sounds more like Keanu at that time, but.
Well, Rob, do you have anyone you'd like to add to the cast?
No. All right. Can you think of Bill Murray would have been fifth? Because that means he's been a very, very small.
Wait.
What if I had Chevy Chase?
Chevy Chase? What?
There's no way. Are you kidding? What if I had Ted Knight?
Oh, is that? Wait. Holy cow. What? Wait a minute. You're telling me Caddyshack has Bill Murray fifth billed?
Bill Murray.
Fifth. After Michael O'Keefe. I'm just telling you,
this is truth. And
oh,
man,
that's the IMDb. Oh, you even had
I screwed up with Ted Knight. I misspelled him here.
Oh, Ted Knight, he was the original one. I was like, wait a minute.
Michael O'Keefe was Danny. Danny Noonan.
Oh, okay.
Tricky, wicked, tricksy. Wow. All right.
But wait, that is really incredible that he is not higher than fifth.
Yeah. Pretty crazy, right? Pretty crazy. Right. Carl Spackler.
Oh, my God.
I think what this game has exposed more than anything else are the holes in our film watching.
I think so. Well, that was games.
This was a really entertaining game. I wish there was a way that we could somehow have people to support us to be able to make cool games.
If like this game has taught us anything, Kyle, it's that we need more support. If you are not a member yet, but you would like to become one, just head over to thenextreel.com/membership. The most it'll cost you is just $5 a month.
A bargain.
It is such a bargain. Members get access to live streams as we record, except for this one because it got kiboscoed. Early access to shows in your own personal podcast feed. Personal podcast feed. My goodness, even a personal podcast feed. And access to the super secret member channels and Discord. Member bonus episodes and even stickers. And you know what? I sent stickers. I sent stickers several weeks ago now. And I sent the stickers. I sent the Kabosco. I sent everybody got a Kabosco. Is it a member? They got the Kabosco. It's out there. Nobody has sent me a picture of a Kabosco in the wild, but everybody, I think, got two Kaboscos in the package. I'm very excited that the Kaboscos are out there.
Did you say that the first person to tag on social media with the Kabosco sticker on there gets a special shout out on a future episode?
And more Kabosco stickers, of course. it is my favorite thing. If you are wondering what movies we talk about on the next reel, that's also an easy thing to remedy. You wonder, where are all these movies? All you have to do is visit our Letterboxd HQ page, letterboxd.com/thenextreel. You'll find a list of all the movies that we're talking about this season, the film board, the next reel, all the movies, even the Trailer Rewind show. When that comes back, they'll build out their season. It's coming out in the next month or so. I think they're going to be starting to get their watch list out the door. So Letterboxd is fantastic. It is a bespoke social network for movie lovers and just for movie lovers. And if you fall in love with it like we have, all you have to do is use the code NEXTREEL at checkout. You can upgrade to Pro or Patron 20% off. 20% off.
But what if I already have a membership?
I'm so glad you asked that, Kyle, because this also works for renewals. And that is rare in this capitalist society.
Very true.
Renewals as well. Thank you, everybody, for your support. We appreciate you and all that you do and help us do around the Next Reel family of film podcasts. And now, the Rob Kabosco Memorial List Challenge.
In nomine patri.
The list this week, last week, I think, who was it last week? I believe it was Ocean and Josh Stolte and Mandy, I think, were the crew last week. And what they handed us was a list of movies that were bombs that became beloved. I think those are cult classics. Is that not the definition of kind of a cult classic film?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it could be, yeah.
I hope it is.
You might as well call this the movies that Kyle loves, because every time I brought the list, I was like, these are all like my favorite movies.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to be asking for backups because that'll take us all night. There's no way we'll get through the backups list. I thought this was actually a really entertaining wandering down memory lane for some of these movies. I'm very excited about my picks, certainly about the movies that I have fallen in love with. So I think with that, it is Rob Kabosco kicking off the Rob Kabosco Memorial List Challenge of bombs that became beloved. Rob, where would you like to start?
Aurora Boris.
Why, thank you so much. I have a story to tell in my three picks tonight, if they're not stolen, after this first one. It's a little story about the 90s and about the way that the tone changed as we went through that decade, maybe a parable for today's times. Bottom line with this first pick is it's a movie that I loved immediately. Not a lot of people did, based by its box office. It had a budget of $65 million. It grossed $17 million. but we did learn how important it is to have a catchy tune when you're about to pull off a heist. It's 1991's Hudson Hawk.
Oh, is that a steal?
Of course it's a steal. Of course it's a steal.
Yeah. Okay,
so, but, my God.
My, but your honor would be, is it beloved?
No. Oh, yeah. Oh, sure it is.
I mean, like, I saw it, and I had the same thing. I went and saw the movie theater, walked out of it like, that movie's great. And then the rest of the world went, no, it isn't. And I went, oh, okay.
But not now. But not now. Okay. That actually, I think a lot of people who lived, I mean, a younger person, no. I don't know if we saw, if Morgan had seen this movie, if we had subjected her to it. But it is now, I think, I remember when Danny Aiello passed, like there was a huge amount of love specifically for that scene with Swinging on a Star. I think there's a lot of people who have a great place in their heart for this film.
Well, I hope so. But now you've made me second guess my love for this movie. I love this movie always.
I found a bunch of lists and I would find a movie. I'm like, oh, I love that movie. I'm like, no one talks about that movie. Is it really beloved? So I just wanted that's a blanket statement for the rest of the ones we do. So we don't have to bring that up.
Yes, right.
Time. Yeah, that's fair. All right, Kyle.
But there's a difference between people hated it and people didn't go see it. So I decided on mine, when I pull up a movie, I would like, oh, what did the critics have to say about it? So I actually found for all mine, the negative responses that critics had to these movies that were bombs that became beloved. So for the first one, here's two quotes from two different critics. An incredibly brutal and pretentious film, ostensibly about alienation in a modern desensitized world. A black comedy that entertains only on the most superficial level. And of course, that could only describe 1999's Fight Club.
Oh, man.
Oh,
jeez. And furthermore, taking every scene on an individual basis, it is often madly brilliant, but put it all together and it's a pretentious, incoherent mess.
Oh, dear.
Why would you take every scene on an individual basis? That's not how movies work. But love the movie from day one. But yeah, it was a bomb at the box office.
That's crazy. I have a number of movies. Now that it's been stolen, I'm pretty upset about that. But I have quite a list, and
Hudson Hawk was not with you.
Hudson Hawk was not with me. We've done this movie on the show. It is an adaptation of a Stephen King property. It's from 1994, and it is one of the most beloved movies, I think, of in sort of movie history. It is one that is often discussed in terms of its filmmaking, its production, its performances. And when it opened, its domestic opening was under $1 million on a $25 million budget. The movie has since well made back when it finally found its legs, it has since well made back what it spent. The movie is The Shawshank Redemption.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible bomb at the box office. Was it a steal, Rob?
No, it was a backup I was ready for that.
Yeah.
I think the unsung hero of that movie really has to be Ted Turner. Because I think it was the nonstop showing of that movie on TBS that transformed it from a forgettable Stephen King adaptation into a classic, just because it was on all the time.
It was on all the time.
Pop over to any of his many stations and watch it.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. All right, Rob, number two.
Okay, so this, I understand you're going to have a problem with my use of the word beloved with this. But let me say, there is something to be said for a movie from the 90s that is now still currently be worked on to be rebooted as a series. This is a movie that had a $60 million production budget. It grossed only $42 million. It really speaks to the gloom, the growing gloom. You had Hudson Hawk, mindless nonsense coming out of the 80s, early 90s. And then as the 90s progressed, we went to this place where we were worried about Y2K. We were worried about the future. We got a little stuff. And it also doesn't help, too, when you have a story that is based on a spaceship that travels around the universe going through hell. I'm talking about 1997's Event Horizon. Okay. And I was waiting. I saw your face. You're like, where is this going?
I was going to, beloved, really? This is my Kyle face from a few minutes ago. Really?
It is because you know what?
Yeah.
There are jokes. Okay, first of all, I remember seeing this when it came out.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, this is crazy. A horror film set in space. And it's got a lot of stuff to it. And of course, yes, there's the grotesque, crazy parts of the film. But it's a great cast. Mm-hmm. And it did make you think a little bit about, you know, what is going on. I mean, it's basically The Exorcist in space. I mean, if you want to get into like, you know, what's going on, right, with what the film is about. And it's got a ton of pop culture references. And yes, Amazon is throwing money at making a series to continue the story. It's not clear actually what they're going to do. Yeah, there's been a lot. The interest has grown in this film since those days. Yeah.
I remember in the Empire magazine, the podcast that they do, there's one of the guys who's a huge fan of it and brings up all the time. And every time he talks to Sam Neill, like, that's what he wants to talk about. Like,
yeah,
sure, you're here for, like, you know, new Jurassic Park, but like, can we talk about Event Horizon?
I clearly need to watch it again. I saw it when it came out and I did not have, I just don't have that historical connection to it. Like, it just hasn't come back up in my life. So. I feel like now
I think they even went to, there's a story where like they actually, when it started to become grow in popularity, there was a point where they wanted to go back and restore some deleted scenes because there apparently are like
it rumored was massively changed.
But they didn't have all the deleted scenes because at the end of the day, they were like, yeah, we're just
the flop. We just throw that stuff away.
Yeah. They threw them away.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. So. All right. Kyle, number two.
Well, this movie is not the least bit scary or suspenseful, but instead grows quickly tedious. The more you struggle to keep track of constantly multiplying plot developments, the harder it gets to care who did it. You leave it with one conviction: stick with the game. From 1985, it's Clue.
Yeah.
I think pretty much that's one of these. There's a couple of generational movies that I feel like everyone of our generation has seen that movie. And it could have been the cable thing, just like it was with that. But you can walk up to anybody and otherwise you go, flames. And they're like, they know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. I think this is the movie that, you know, for those of us who were born after a certain point, it's this movie that defines Tim Curry. And then we went back to see the other Rocky one. Right? Yeah. Like, this is how it starts when meeting Mr. Boddy. And the fact that I became a straight up collector because, you know, they released the three different endings that you could see multiple different times, depending on when and where you went.
I saw ending C.
Okay. I don't remember which ending I had because it came out on video, all the endings were there and I just kept watching them over and over again. So I'm a big fan of Clue. That is a great, great pick. I feel like I need to at least be right with you on the generational movies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say I loved this movie, but I recognize its importance both in filmmaking, in particularly garage filmmaking, right? Guerrilla filmmaking. And it represents the passion of making film. It also introduced a whole cast of figures that have become, in their own way, iconic. It's a movie that cost $27,000 to make and grossed $3 million in the box office. It never once played at more than 50 theater screens in the United States at the same time. That movie is Clerks. Right?
Absolutely.
And that it has sparked many, many things. And I had the movie and watched it often. Mm-hmm. And it is what it is. I liked those guys most in that movie. And I kind of never really found a place for them after that. Like, when it was still an oddity, it was great. Mm-hmm. And then it became a franchise.
Yeah, yeah, true. So,
it is what it is. My number two, Clerks. And, Rob, that takes us back around the horn.
All right, so this is not a surprise. I had there's no way I could do a list of these movies, and this is not on the list, even though it's a low-hanging fruit, but I don't matter because I remember going to the theater with my wife. I dragged my wife to this movie on opening night. Nobody knew what it was or why we were going to go see it. It is one of the few times that I've taken my wife to a movie where I bawled at the end of the movie. And he's right here. There he is. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about 1999's The Iron Giant. Because this movie is in my top three of all time. all movies. This is one of my favorite movies of all time. And nobody still remembers how I think you could do a whole documentary. I'm waiting for the documentary that talks about the story of the Iron Giant and how you take a movie from its source material. This is, I think I've mentioned this before on other stuff we've done. There's probably no other movie, maybe other than Forrest Gump, where the source material is and it is transformed into something spectacular. But in this case, I mean, they spent over $70 million. The movie made $23
million. Yeah.
It was a huge bomb. Yeah. I mean, it almost single-handedly, I always like to think is, it almost single-handedly killed Warner Brothers Animation. Yeah. It killed the Warner Brothers Studio Stores. Yeah. Like, because they were stocked with Iron Giant toys. And like, you can't, Brad Bird. Yeah. I mean, all of this, what this movie meant and how the marketing of it was bungled. Everyone knows this. I mean, I would love to watch the documentary on how the Iron Giant almost didn't happen because it was a mess. But anyway,
well, I mean, the movie that that's I love. One opinion. I mean, another opinion might be that the movie, as beautifully drawn and as sleek and engaging as it is, has the annoyance of incredible smugness. It is, one could say, blinded by the hindsight. not a steal, but I knew you were going to pick that one. So I specifically found a critic that had a real problem with that movie.
How could you do that?
Wow. That was... sick burn,
you
bro.
You choose. Dude, there's nothing. Seriously. Anyway.
Well, let's just see if we have a witty retort.
Yeah. I say, I guarantee this was not will not be stolen. I say my last one. So I'm going to tell you how I saw this movie, and then I'm going to read you the critic thing. So I was in a film class in college. Like, it was history of film. And so I got exposed to a lot of stuff I had never seen before. That's, you know, where I got to see, you know, the Red Balloon and Umbrellas of Cherbourg and all these like stuff that was outside what I had access to in suburban Indiana. So then we got to see there like, okay, now like, I'm like, oh, great. Now we got to watch an old silent black and white film. Oh, great. And so like go in and, you know, it's like, you're in college, you sit down in a classroom and they shut off the lights and start playing it. And I see one of the funniest movies I've ever seen in my life. And everyone else in the class is sitting there like, oh, yes, Maison Scene. They're like taking notes. And I am like, I start trying to stop myself from laughing, and which makes it even worse. And I end up the only person in this entire class just flat out guffawing. Because I love Buster Keaton and I love The General. That was the first time I had ever seen that movie. And it holds up. Like, I watched it in the 90s and it's a movie from 1926 and it's still brilliant. However, the critics actually found a critic from 1926 did not like it. And so they said, he said, of course, its principal comedy scene is built on that elementary bit, the chase, and you can't continue a fight for almost an hour and expect results. Especially is this is so when the action is placed entirely in the hands of the star. It was his story. He directed and he acted. The result is a flop. It was a very expensive movie for the time, and it came out. But like, I still hold The General as being one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. It's just unbelievable that movie was even made. It's everything almost practical. They really dropped a train off of the side of a mountain. I mean, yeah,
it's incredible. It's incredible. You hope that critic's review is on his headstone somewhere. Right. I was the one who didn't like Buster Keaton's The General.
I would say I don't think he was the only one. Like, yeah. It did not do well. It was an expensive movie and did not. It was not City Lights.
It finds its home, just like. I mean, you might say that critic had a real case of the Mondays. That's right. This movie is, I'm so glad it wasn't stolen. It did straight up terribly in the box office. It domestic opening made just over $4 million on a budget of 10. International, this just shows that the numbers I have are probably not great. It made $446 in the international box office. It did not do well abroad. But it is a movie that I absolutely loved. And I think it's because I saw it at a time that I was having just that very, very wretched office stank on me. I went to an office, I sat in a cubicle, and I suffered the paper jam, even when there was not a paper jam. It is 1999's Mike Judge film Office Space. This movie is straight up quotable, and it lives in my psyche. There are people who love this movie. There are people who really, really don't like Mike Judge and some of the stuff he does. But this movie hits me right where it's funny. Office Space.
I think that movie has one of the best first acts of any of those comedies from that era.
Yeah.
In my opinion, and then it falls apart.
I think for the last
half hour, there's like nothing that's really funny or quotable or memorable at all. But I think it's sort of like it has this great premise, and then goes, oh man, I don't know where we go from here.
Well, and since I'm last, I'll go ahead and say, isn't that I think the same or worse can be said of Idiocracy, right? And one of the greatest things that can be said of Idiocracy is the Urban Dictionary definition is a comedy that became a documentary. Like that movie, it's saying so much, and sometimes it's saying it in a really funny way. And others, it just falls apart. But for me, Office Space works better than Idiocracy. And so, you know, that's where I stand.
Could Swingline have sold any more red staplers?
Yeah.
They had to invent a red stapler, right? Like it wasn't on the shelves. So I think that was, it was a very funny movie with a very, very funny cast and, sure got us some faces. I did have a couple of other backups. I'm bummed that I missed out on Hudson Hawk because it fits in another movie that is that I don't know that I could call beloved, but it is one of my very, very favorite guilty pleasures, and that is The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. What's that watermelon doing there? I'll tell you later. And the other one was The Crow. I was actually a big fan of The Crow, but I wonder if it would have been. I don't know if you would call it beloved.
I would take quibble with the other side of it. I don't think it was a bomb. I think when it came out, it was did really well.
I wonder why, though. Right? Like it had the event of the tragic death of Brandon Lee on set, and I wonder if that actually it helped it, you know, earn money, and that the actual fans found it and stuck with it. And otherwise, it wouldn't have done all that well. So
true. They've never been able to do it again.
Yeah.
Every time they've tried to do Crow in anything other form anywhere else, it's just never caught on.
I know. And yet, I mean, I'm sure you guys were wearing eyeliner for a while.
Well, sure.
It made it cool.
Well,
hey, I even wrote a sequel to it. So
you know.
I did. That's back in the fanfic days.
Wow. Check that out. All right. Yeah. Other backups? Right.
I did. I had John Carpenter's The Thing, which came out 1 month after E.T., and America voted on what kind of alien they wanted to see.
Yep. Yep.
I had, of course, the movie that I think I bring up every time I'm on here, Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yep.
Which had a snakes on the plane level amount of nerd hype. And it came out and only nerds went to see it.
Yep.
But time has shown that is actually one of Edgar Wright's fantastic. And I have awful things that critics said about all of these movies as well, just in case it got stolen. A movie that has become a holiday classic, Hocus Pocus, which came out in August and bombed hard. Because why do you put out a Halloween movie in August, Disney?
You do not.
Yeah,
you do not, Disney.
But I'll read you that one just as we wrap up. Forget amusement parks and hockey teams. It's in movie comedies that Disney is having its real crisis, as evidenced by this would-be laugh-getter that begins with the murder of a child and a triple hanging. And now they're making so much money on the merchandise.
That's amazing.
I also did have I had Willy Wonka to pull that. Yeah. So here's the deal. Did you all, when you were doing your the searching and variety of things, do you know what movie I apparently need to see?
What?
Is a movie called Pop Star, Never Stop, Never
so
Stopping.
Good. Yeah. I love that movie. 100%. And the soundtrack is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yep. Then that's on.
That is one of those things. I think that's going to, like Scott Pilgrim, that's going to have its time. Like in 10 years, everybody will be like, how did you guys, how did you American movie audiences not love this? Because it's amazing. If you're a fan of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh, yeah. What's so beautiful about it is it knows exactly what it is the entire time. It is, it never loses sight of what it's trying to do.
Hyper-focused.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I say, I even go as far as say, if you loved Spinal Tap, see this, because this is like the Spinal Tap of now, because it's about a parody of the music industry now.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I'm good. I'm glad I asked.
Yep.
All right. Yeah. Cool.
Yep. Yep. That's great. Now we have the distinguished honor of actually preparing the list subject for next week's team. And next week's team, Tommy Metz, is going to be hosting Ocean Murph and Chrissy Lenz. What are we going to offer them to talk about next week?
Well, first thing that came to mind was disappointing sequels, but I don't know if I want to put that negativity on there because, you know, it's March, dark. It's spring.
Yeah,
it's,
you want to give them some.
Oh, wow. I was going to say Doomsday. Doomsday stories. That's really funny. I was okay.
What
okay.
happened in the last hour and a half?
We're still reeling from the.
Maybe it's board games made into movies.
Yeah, just have them all fight over the three.
Yeah, yeah, over Jumanji Part One and
Jumanji and Battleship and Clue. Those and are the Clue. Three. They just keep on doing.
Don't forget Zathura. Don't forget Zathura. Favreau has his day.
I've just been hired to do the Ticket to Ride adaptation, so it's going pretty well. It's going pretty well. I'm thinking Vin Diesel for the Red. That's D.
It was good. You had me. I'd already moved on, but then you wrenched me back into it. No, it was perfect. Any other? What did we talk about tonight? We talked about awards. We talked about Marvel shows.
Are there enough for workplace comedies? Oh. I mean, you talked about Office Space.
I did.
Are there enough? Oh. Business, like business, business.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So what? Like, so
does it have to be a comedy? Like, why is what is?
Oh, no, I was saying we can just we'll start with the word business and build out from there. Yeah. So,
I just I'm trying to think of our audience, and our audience includes Tom, and that means it's going to have a horror. Well,
When you say business, or do you want to do workplace? Because I mean, workplace stories is one thing. Things about business is another.
Best company to work for.
Oh, look at you!
You know
that had real Kyle Olson spice on it.
I kind of like the ones that allow the people to sort of like this is where I'd want to work kind of thing.
I like it. It's like this is a headline I'd read on the front of Vanity Fair. Best company to work for. 2022, take it however way you want to take it.
Take it however you want,
So basically, movies about home.
See, now there's an angle.
Really? You really? Yeah, that's there's an angle. There's an angle. That would be the Kvasko theme of the week. I love it. I would take that. I would listen to that.
I mean.
Okay. Best company to work for 2022.
Secret Window, Secret Garden. That's my first one.
Secret Garden.
Do you remember that? Another Stephen King adaptation with Johnny Depp.
Awesome.
No
best
one should
company see. To work for. We're doing it. That's a win.
I like it.
Excellent. Hey, gentlemen, it's good to see you. We haven't done a trio like just us in a long, long time. I miss you guys.
Long overdue.
Especially, let me just say, I know this is the time where we would plug our own thing, but I want to plug your own thing. I am loving 10 Random Things, the YouTube channel, live 5 p.m. Arizona time on the Next Real YouTube channel. It's really, really great. I even put it in my email signature.
That's so nice of you.
I'm telling everybody. I have a great time on that show, and everybody I talk to about that show says that is a fantastic premise. I'm going to go watch that show. Tell the world about that show.
It is the show that is for things that fans, audiences, people who love pop culture are talking about. So it's timely, which is why we do it live. We pick up all the things that are happening in the week. On this past week's episode, we had a few things to talk about. The Batman. Mm-hmm. We're introducing regular segments that are very entertaining. One of them this past week was the overhyped product intro, which I think is going to return again and again. I won't tell you what it is. You have to watch the episode.
We had a build a film festival. So we picked an actor and we had to pick 10 movies that would wrap up their career.
Well, and speaking of building things, we did actually do a fantastic time-lapse build of the Razor Crest from The Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. So speaking of...
We had the Razor Crest on. We did a live tour that was for real.
That was incredible.
No, the only thing I was going to say is the great thing about the show is that it is live. Anything can happen. some weird things will happen, and we have a lot of ideas. There'll be a lot of things we're going to explore. Yeah. So
the nice thing is, it's a 10 random thing, so even we don't know what's going to happen.
You can subscribe to the show in audio form, in podcast form, anywhere you get your podcast. It's on Spotify, it's on Apple Podcasts, Google. It's everywhere you can get your podcast. But I'm going to tell you this: don't do that. That's not the best. That's not the best way to enjoy this show. Please watch it on YouTube. Subscribe to it. Get it wherever you watch your YouTubes, because you got to see what the guys are up to. So fantastic.
And it does live on. If you miss it at five, you can, at five o'clock on Wednesdays, you can go back and listen and watch it at your leisure.
You can always find the latest episode right at the top of the page, truestory.fm/10randomthings. Please go there and watch the show. Support the boys. They're doing great work. Also, I'm podcasting. Don't worry about it. It's fine. We're still loving watching movies and doing that stuff, but go watch 10 Random Things. Thank you guys for hanging out with me tonight. Rob Kabasco, Kyle Olson, you're the best.
Thank you.
We love you, Pete.
And thank you, everybody, for downloading and listening to this show. You guys are fantastic. We appreciate your time and your attention. And on behalf of these yahoos, Rob was here. I'm Pete Wright. We'll see you next time on the Saturday Matinee.
Go do something nice for yourself.
I may have Kabasco'd on myself. I forgot you guys were there.
I love the conversations that so many of our hosts have had on their shows. Steve and JJ on Trailer Rewind, Ray and Ocean on Silver Linings, even Tommy's short-lived No, No, Wait, Hear Me Out.
And so many films they've discussed started out as a book, a play, or even a TV series.
Well, now you can support our whole family of podcasts by using our new Originals page to buy the original source material used to inspire films covered on our shows.
Just visit thenextreel.com/originals. Your purchases made through our links give us a small commission at no extra cost to you and allow us to keep having these fantastic conversations.
It's a wonderful way to support the show. Producing these podcasts week after week require a ton of work behind the scenes. If you'd like to help support our efforts, try using our Originals page when shopping for books and movies that we've covered.
It's your one-stop shop for Amazon and Apple links, where you can buy the book, play, video game, movie, etc., upon which the movie is based.
Original material for Trailer Rewind movies like If Beale Street Could Talk,
The Goldfinch,
Aniara,
or The Two Faces of January.
Or Silver Linings movies like Repo Men, which was based on the Repossession Mambo.
Plus, by using those links to buy books, Amazon and Apple show us a little bit of love, which allows you to support our family of shows with minimal effort.
Visit thenextreel.com/originals. It's a fantastic way to support the show and find a great book to read.
That's right. Head over to thenextreel.com/originals to find your next read and get started today.